This episode of Football 301, Andrew Siciliano, Yahoo's own, joins me to talk about some coaching news. Todd Monken going to the Browns, some assistants, some coordinators and hires that we wanted to talk about as well and break that down. It was so much fun talking with Andrew. We even got some Olympics talk in there for way longer than I was expecting, and I enjoyed every minute of it. We could have done that for about 3 hours, but we had a second half of the pod, and I break down the mock draft that Charles and I did this week. Very fun talking about some of the favorite picks of that first round mock draft. Very fun show. See you guys in a sec. Hello, welcome back to Football 301. I am your host, Nate Tice. Fun show for you today. Kind of hitting different parts of the brain today. We got some coaching news we're going to catch up on, and then we're going to talk about a mock draft that Charles McDonald and I did and go, you know, I wouldn't say pick by pick in that first round, but just highlight a few of the players and teams that we enjoyed matching as they say in wrestling, fantasy booked a little bit, did a little fan fiction, but that was a ton of fun. But before that, like I said, because the coaching cycle never stops, there's still two openings and we have plenty of coaching assistants that got hired, including a head coach for the Cleveland Browns and someone that has some ties to Cleveland that we're working together for the first time. Some corporate synergy here. Andrew Siciliano, how you doing, Andrew? Yahoo's very own. Great to see you. Thanks for joining
me. Tice. I'm flattered. I'm touched. I'm moved. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Like, the show's finally coming together. Somebody asked me recently, hey, have you had Nate on the show? And I said, no, we need to have Nate on the show. And then all of a sudden, like, the phone call went the other way. And I'm like, yes, let's do this.
It's opened. The lines are open now. We've uncovered it. We worked it out, you know, got the gunk out of there, made sure that we had the right number for you.
Hold on. Can you hear my neighbor's hedge trimmer over there? You can't, can you? Because he just turned that on. No?
No. Can't hear it.
Okay, good.
Can you hear my son brushing his teeth right now before a nap? That's something that I, you know, as how many kids do you have? Do you have kids?
I do not, no.
You do not? Yeah. I have two kids now, and working from home and podcasting always during nap time. There's gonna be a little schedule adjustment next year.
Yeah, but it's a problem.
There's gonna be I love my kids. They're amazing. But there's a little working from home kind of thing with the bathroom behind me.
I also meant working from home. It's a good problem to have. Yes, we assume you love your kids. I just meant the working from home part.
I realized that after my initial mouth. I said the words and they came out of my mouth. And I realized what you were saying after, which has never gotten me in trouble before, that I talk before I think. and that the flow of consciousness just comes out of this mouth. But before I bury myself too deep, luckily my wife doesn't listen to too many of these shows. So before I bury myself a little too much, let's get into those coaching hires. Because like I said before, you have some ties with Cleveland. You're very in tune with the Browns. And they finally filled their head coaching spot with Ravens offensive coordinator Todd Monken. Monk is someone I actually have some familiarity with, even just outside of NFL circles. My dad worked with him in Jacksonville, and just been aware of Monk for a long time now. Ravens offensive coordinator, he's the Georgia offensive coordinator during their national championship runs, was the head coach of Southern Miss, offensive coordinator for the Bucks, just a coaching lifer, and now gets the head job in Cleveland after a interesting search is how I'll describe it. That's the word I'm going to use. But Andrew, when you saw this, how you feeling about it? What you thinking about it? The Browns finally get their guy, Todd Monken, and what you think about that?
He's a damn good coach. It's not where I think most of us thought this would land. So like, both can be true. I understand it might be a tough sell to the fans, but he got a really good coach. And I know Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry are not coming with him. I understand all of that. But I think he's really good at making chicken salad. Let's put it that way. And I personally don't like chicken salad. I mean, why would you dice up chicken and throw mayonnaise on top of it? I find that disgusting. But if you look, he ran basically air raid with Brandon Weeden in Oklahoma State. You saw what he did at Georgia, tight ends and backs. He ran the football with Les Miles a lot. He's not going to run what his brother runs at Army, I don't think. I'm sorry, his cousin, Jeff, who I spoke to this morning. No triple option out of West Point. But he's really good with whatever personnel he has. I was talking to a coordinator for another team yesterday, and that was the first thing that stood out to him, is that how he is able to adapt his personnel. He's not one system, my way or the highway kind of guy. And you know him personally. I do not. But everyone Nate tells me the same thing. Like, he's going to curse. He's going to joke. He's going to hold you accountable. He's your fun uncle, mm-hmm. but your fun uncle that's going to turn the screws as well. And it's not going to, like, he's going to screw around with you. But at the same time, yep. like, you better know your details and there's going to be accountability. And they need that. That's not a shot at Kevin. But, like, this team, this year was better than last, certainly, when it comes to procedural penalties and operational stuff on the offensive yep. side of yep. the ball. But you need that. You need to clean that up. You have a young team. You got to rebuild the offensive line. Obviously, that is going to be a massive, massive job for this team in the offseason, whether it's free agency or draft. Right now, you have Zach Zinner, DeJuan Jones, and Luke Whipler, really the only three offensive linemen under contract, two of the three coming back from injuries, one worse than the other. George Warhop coming in, I think, is a huge step in the right direction. Talking to the Hall of Famer Joe Thomas yesterday, Joe played for George the last time he was in Cleveland, and Joe loves him. And that is not just a, hey, I support this hire. Like, we've had this conversation with Joe in the past. Like, he loves George Warhop. He put him in the Bill Callahan category. Those are his words, not mine. So that is a huge endorsement, and I think it's a step in the right direction. I know he's going to win the presser. Winning the presser doesn't mean anything. He's going to get some tough questions. Jimmy Haslam will as well. He can handle himself in front of the camera. We'll see what happens when this team gets on the field in September.
Yeah, Monk, I love how you put it. He'll swear. He'll be funny. He's goofy. He's one of the funniest people, period, because he's just absolutely insane. And I mean that as a compliment. This is a guy that has been around ball his whole life. Like, you're like, oh, his brother, oh, his cousin. And that actually is the Monken family, like in Illinois especially. Yeah, coaches everywhere. Uncles, I mean, when my dad was with the Bears, we went to a bar in Libertyville and there was a Monken there. You know, like they just crop up everywhere. And he was a coach in high school, of course.
I was having that conversation with Jeff Monken this morning. So whether it's Naperville or Joliet or you name it, Bolingbrook.
Yep.
Every town in Illinois, in Chicagoland and Point South, has either a Monken playing for that high school team, yes. coaching that high school team, or has a Monken's name on their stadium. They run that deep.
That's true. You're not even kidding. You're like dead serious. I mean, that's anyone listening, like Andrew's being dead serious. That's exactly how it is in Illinois high school. I didn't know that until I knew Todd before that, but then when my dad went to the Bears, that's when I kind of was like hanging in that area. And that's what I learned that. And I was like, I didn't know he was a lifer, essentially. Like, not just coach's kid, but just coach family. And that why I wanted to bring that up is that he might be perceived as goofy or just off the wall and off kilter. He knows what he's talking about. Like, that's the thing, is that he's not going to disrespect the game. Maybe that's a good way to put it. Like, he kind of understands what team building's all about, what kind of how you got to get there. And this is a, I understand that maybe some of the Browns fans like saw some of the interesting names. You know, I know Shieldhouse from the Rams was interesting. But again, you're getting into a situation that Shieldhouse hasn't called plays, and it could be exciting. It could end up being the next McVay. He could end up being one of these guys, the Gruden from 30 years ago, one of these young guys that just shows you so much. You don't know exactly. There's downsides to that as well, especially going into a franchise that needs a lot. I'm glad you brought up the offensive line. Because that's kind of been our running joke for me, is that like that's the ticking time bomb of this franchise, is the offensive line yeah. contracts are all coming up. And so whoever's playing at quarterback has to be behind that offensive line. And so at least getting a guy, I'm so glad you brought up the personnel stuff, because Monken's offenses, whether it was Oklahoma State, was spread, shoot tons of RPOs and gun. Then he goes to Tampa and it's traditional offense, but it's chuck it. Like throw it up, go balls, dropping back, 7-step drops, let it launch. And that matched their quarterback, Ryan Fitzpatrick, also matched their receivers, Evans, all these guys that can win vertically. Then he goes to Baltimore, I formations, you know, like there's some gun stuff, but there's a lot of more traditional stuff too. There's a traditional blend. It's what I like from an NFL offense, where there's some college elements of gun, QB read game, that kind of stuff, but also the under center, more traditional offensive I formation, yada, yada. So that's where I'm encouraged what his offensive, like kind of like play calling will be and what he'll make the most, like you said, chicken salad. Like, I agree with that. I think he'll make the most of where they have. It's just that this team needs a lot still. And that's kind of course, you know, the quarterback questions, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm kind of curious what you think about that as well.
Yeah, no, all of that is true. And who knows who the quarterback is, right? Shador is certainly going to get shot, you would have to think, assuming he's still there, and I have no reason to believe that he won't be there. But are you going to find an answer? I mean, people are already starting to connect dots. Are you going to Carson Beck? Like, are you going to find an answer here in this draft? And obviously, Monken had Beck at Georgia. I don't know. I honestly don't. I mean, you can't – everyone can't go out and get Malik Willis in the offseason.
Right.
Now, that would be great. You can incorporate all the run game stuff you saw with Lamar, maybe not this year, but in the other 2 years with Todd there. But I don't know what the quarterback position is going to look like. They need to add to the receiver room. I know Browns fans are pounding the table for Carnell Tate at 6. I think I would pound the table as well for an offensive tackle at 6. We're a long way until April 23rd. But whether it's 6 24, you need to address both of those positions. And then as we sit here on, what is this, Nate, Thursday afternoon, don't know what's going to happen yet on the defensive side of the ball. Those guys are all under contract. Right. They want them all to stay. We know Schwartz's understandable frustration that he didn't get the job.
Right.
How that turns out, I got no idea.
Same. They have no obligation to let Schwartz go. Like that. If they did, as far as like there's no legal ramifications that Schwartz could go. You're under contract. It is what it is. And parallel, like if you wanted to like interview somewhere else, they could block anything they want, unless it's for a head coaching job. That's how the league works. That whole saga has been funny because of how much that was a hangup. I should say a hangup, but a variable of this job was how much the Browns were like, well, Schwartz is going to be your DC. And then as soon as Monken gets hired, he's like, no, I'm not. It's just a very interesting kind of like path that we ended up getting here. I can understand Schwartz's frustrations with it being like, hey, I'm not this. I should be getting a job. I should be getting all this. But it's kind of it's one of those things where it's like, well, Jim, you're not, and you're under contract. And that's kind of how we have to go with it. So curious how that kind of resolves itself. Did you have any inklings on that?
I don't know how it's going to resolve itself. I know, like, if you look at the staff, Jason Tarver's obviously been in D.C. Efrem Banda interviewed for the Cowboys job, the Cowboys D.C. job before Christian Parker got it. So, I mean, there are obvious choices there on staff. I don't know if that's going to have to be the answer. I also don't know what Todd Monken wants. I assume he would like to see Jim Schwartz stay there. You'd have to assume, but I can't speak for the guy. The defense is a selling point. Right? What Jim Schwartz has done to this defense the last 3 years is absolutely a selling point. And I think, going back to how the fans or the public perceive this, the idea of an arranged marriage of a young play caller, whether it's Udinski or Shieldhouse, granted neither has called plays in the NFL, I get that, and then the veteran defensive coach, I likened it to kind of what, maybe not the same, but kind of what the Steelers did even when they hired Mike Tomlin. You know, Mike was 1 year in Minnesota, correct me if I'm wrong, they ran a 4-3, he gets to Pittsburgh, and they're like, hey, Dick LeBeau's here. He's a former head coach, Schwartz, former head coach. He's the DC, had success, same thing with Schwartz. Different system, they're running a 3-4. Hey, Mike, this is your DC. And I think that might have been the model, the blueprint, but then now that isn't the case. Look, I'm a big Nate Shieldhouse fan. I don't know him. He and I overlapped with the Rams for about 5 minutes, and I was doing the Paris Olympics, and we never have met, but we have obviously a lot of mutual friends and contacts, and they swear by the guy. At the same time, neither he nor Udinski got a job, at least assuming they're not going to get a job, in this cycle. And I think for the fans' comparison's sake, it would have been difficult if either of those two or both got head coaching jobs elsewhere. And then the inevitable comparison next fall between Monken and those guys. That is not going to happen right now, it looks like. It could happen next year. Right. And everyone loves to compare, whether it's in coaching and football or relationships and life and whatever. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. But hopefully by the time either of those guys, both of those guys get head coaching jobs, Monken's proven himself. But we're a long way from that.
Yeah. Kind of my closing thing with that, too, is that there's 10 openings this year and not a ton. It wasn't the greatest crop of coaching candidates. There's a ton of QB openings right now. I talked about earlier this week.
And there will be
this.
More.
Yeah, I know. There's QB openings. There's not a lot of like this isn't the class to be, whether it's quarterback class, free agency class, quarterbacks, this is not the year to need a guy. It's hard anyways, but especially this year. And on top of it, same with coaching. That's why I thought it was so crazy. So many teams were so aggressive. And maybe it was because the Chiefs didn't make it. And so a lot of owners were like, this is our year. And then stuff tapers off for those teams. And of course, there's frustrations like we can't get over the hump, yada, yada. But it's also saying that some of these teams that do have openings, why are the Cardinals still open? Well, you could say, haha, it's the Cardinals. But you just got to look at just everybody's infrastructure. I'm including the Browns here too. You have an incumbent GM, which can be a hangup for some guys. You have quarterback questions, is how I'll put it. You might have cap stuff that might be issues. You might have O-line stuff for these teams. And if you're going to have your pick of the litter, teams are going to, or coaches are going to go for the guy, the teams that have an entrenched quarterback or a quarterback they think they can win with, or an answer to find a quarterback. And that's what's hard with some of these teams. Like if the Browns had pick one, you know, one overall, that changes a lot. I bet you there's a lot more interested parties because now you have a path to a Fernando Mendoza. But you don't this year. So a lot of these guys are like, I'll just wait a year. And we were talking about this a little bit, but I also think coordinator jobs, these guys, I will say that some of these guys are being patient. You got to think of Ben Johnson's saga, that Ben Johnson's name was hot for over 2 years and he took his time and he went interviewed with spots that had options at quarterback. And I think some of these coordinators now are getting paid well, that it's not how maybe it used to be where it was like, oh, it's one of 32 jobs and I'm making so much more money now. You can make, these guys are still making a ton of money, NFL head coaches, don't get me wrong. But at least the coordinators can still, you can like, oh, I can live on seven figures and I could be an OC and just find a better spot and build up stock. I don't know. I think there's a little bit more thoughtfulness on all of this. Maybe the next subject might be the best kind of example of this. But any closing thoughts maybe on the Browns before I kind of move it down?
Yeah. Coordinator. I would say, sorry, I was distracted by the lawnmower over here now. 8 of the 10 openings had the GM in place. So Atlanta, Miami are the only two that didn't. Yeah. So for every fan out there that says, why didn't you blow both the coach and the GM out? 8 of the 10 kept the GM. The other side of it, too, with the coordinator thing, it's a great point you make. And it's what I went back with Mike McDaniel when snarky Browns fans, understandably, or snarky members of the media. And as I always tell people, snark is not analysis. It's snark. Snark. When they said, well, Mike McDaniel.
Cynicism isn't a trait. Cynicism is it's just something you do.
Right. Mike McDaniel didn't want the Browns job. I'm like, right, because Stephen Ross is going to pay for him to live in Manhattan Beach and coach Justin Herbert. And then after he wakes up every morning and strolls on the Strand through Manhattan Beach, after he coaches Justin Herbert for a year, next year's cycle, he could take whichever job he wants. Exactly. Jesse Minter doesn't want the Browns job. Guys, everybody knew Jesse Minter was going to be the Ravens coach. Okay, that's why he pulled out, because he was going to be the Ravens coach. So, I like that he was going back home to the building he already knew. So, I think Mike McDaniel has a great coordinator life, and I hope we're not in a world next year where there are 10 openings, because I don't think that's good for anybody.
No, it's not. And there's a lot of tapped wells as far as the coaching trees right now. It's a lot of, all right, we need some new trees to sprout up right now, because we're getting retreads and retreads. Let's talk about Mike McDaniel, actually, because on this show, at least, I haven't really kind of focused on this hire. I think maybe it was kind of just timing of the show. Also, there was still some, like, he was taking interviews, but then also he was like, oh, I'm interviewing for the Bills job. Never mind. I'm out. Like, because obviously something happened there that maybe they had an inkling for Joe Brady. But Mike McDaniel hired his offensive coordinator of the Chargers, like you said, working with Justin Herbert. And what I think is going to be I'm very excited. I think a lot of people are, but I'm very excited for this pairing. Also, I think they announced today that he's bringing his offensive line coach from Miami with him as well, which makes a lot of sense. Kind of get that pairing going there. But what'd you think about Mike Daniel with the Chargers? Just focus on not even just the steps to get there, but I totally agree with you. Like, this is the best way to reset your kind of stock. Work with one of the dudes at quarterback. That's a great way to boost your head coaching stock. So Mike McDaniel, Chargers OC, kind of just any more straight thoughts on him?
My first, two first reactions. Number one was, imagine if Herbert and McDaniel had, I'm sorry, Herbert and Tua had been flipped in the draft, and McDaniel had taken that Dolphins job 4 years ago with Herbert as the quarterback, how things might have been different there. Yeah. Now we actually get to see how it would be.
Yeah.
And he adds a run game element. Obviously, the Charger O-line was a mash unit last year. If that O-line is healthy, I am fascinated to see what he could do. I also want Hard Knocks there. The Harbaugh,
just for
you know, eyes darting around the room. Harbaugh, yeah. That Harbaugh,
oh, yes.
And then McDaniel, you put them together like that. That is the NFL Films content that we need. I think that is the NFL Films content that will break the internet one way or the other. Even if there are people out there, especially Dolphins fans, who are kind of sick of Mike McDaniel's snark, but just his character on the podium. Right. I get it. They didn't win enough games. And so you turn on the podium guy. He's going to get a refresh here. And the two of them together, I think, is must see TV. It's still a great division. I assume the Chiefs will bounce back one way or the other. I'm not here to say that Justin Herbert is all of a sudden going to ride to the Super Bowl with Mike McDaniel. But I do think, with the old all due respect to Greg Roman, that this is the reboot this offense needs. You do have to, I think, go get another weapon on the outside. I don't know that Keenan Allen can come back and do this again. Ladd McConkey is a great piece. He's a great player. Trey Harris, I think, is an ascending player. Yeah, and Aronde Gadsden as well. I'm partial to my orange man, but you need another weapon to stretch the field there.
Yeah, I actually even like a Marion Hampton at back. It actually fits for this because Hampton's he's big, but he's a home run hitter. He's not big in the sense that he's going to break 15 tackles in the box. Yeah, he can run through a guy. I think the Giants game was maybe the best example of all of it. Like when he gets going, he can run over a guy and everything, but that's not how he wins. He wins finding space and then going. This is the best type of offensive system for that. Get him in space, let him build up speed and just roll. So that's going to be very exciting to watch and that offense too. I'm very curious to see what he cooks up. McDaniel has shown, he showed new twists on the same kind of offensive stuff. That the Shanahan guys have been doing for years, and then he twisted it based on Tua wanting to get rid of the ball quickly, his weapons at receiver being two of the fastest players in the league. So he just built the whole offense out of speed. Now you're getting kind of more Harbaugh personnel, which I think is going to be fun. Like now, sometimes when these guys, I'll just say the Shanahan guys, Kubiak guys, maybe when they always get their pick of the litter, that cannot sometimes work out as well because you maybe need another guy going like, well, you actually need this at offensive line or you need this in the receiver room. You can't just run a bunch of guys with 99 speed on Madden, you know, build a whole receiver room out of it. You're going to need a little bigger body or something. It's kind of fun sometimes when maybe someone else buys the groceries for them, you know, to use a Bill Parcellsism. Like they buy the groceries for them and let them cook with that and see what they kind of come up with those ingredients as opposed to maybe the ones that they pick. They might not be able to pick it for themselves perfectly. Picked it themselves perfectly. I'm very excited about this pairing. I think everybody that's a football watcher should be. I thought this was the best the Chargers could do. It's somewhat different than Greg Roman is not like the worst thing that's ever existed. Don't get me wrong. It was just that he showed to me that when things weren't ideal, the offensive line falling apart, the other aspects of their team, other injuries that they had, he wasn't able to mitigate that and kind of pivot. McDaniel has showed offensive line was falling apart. All right, we're going to do this with the run game. We're going to do this with the play action game. We're going to put the quarterback on the move. We're going to change up the blocking angles. We're going to do motion just to help everybody out. So even if things go how they typically do in LA, everybody getting hurt, I'm more encouraged because McDaniel has shown to me that like he can kind of at least mitigate it enough and maybe get his quarterback still kind of like staying in line, not feeling pressed and seeing it all devolve like we've seen the last couple of years with LA, or just anytime Justin Herbert's playing quarterback for the Chargers.
Has anyone connected the dots? And because the Niners, obviously, their injuries must come from an electrical substation next door.
Duh.
The team, however,
who can't
has
be that. Some
electricity on their helmet, their injuries have nothing to do with their electrically themed name.
Has anyone put that
None
together?
That.
Is this a new theory?
No one's. Because they have their injuries too every year. I'm actually, Nate, really want to pick your brain. I'm curious because the last couple of years, post-concussions, plural, Tua, it seems like McDaniel's got to call plays so that his quarterback can't be hit. Like, he can't be hit. You can't run him. You can't move him, at least not much. Mm-hmm. And that ball has to come out quickly. How does McDaniel adapt now, I would think in a good way, to a quarterback that seemingly is like RoboCop, right? That that seeks out contact.
Yeah, Tua, for better or for worse, this was my way of kind of like backhand complimenting Tua. Tua knows what he is. Like, he knows he doesn't have the biggest arm. He knows he has to get rid of the ball quickly. He knows he's not a creator. But that's also the negatives of, like, why would you take someone that can't do all those things top 10? That's a longer discussion. But I think what McDaniel tried to do with all the speed and everything and how the offensive system was, well, Tua wants to get rid of the ball quickly and be accurate with it. And, all right, so we'll just make the offense and we'll just put the guardrails of this offense towards that. Herbert has shown that he can kind of handle a little bit of everything. How I envision how this offense is going to be is a little bit more what the Rams are doing a little bit with Stafford, where there's play action and there's no RPOs. Like, I think the RPO aspects of this offense are taken out. RPOs aren't super heavy in a Shanahan offense. They would rather just straight, they like church and state. Run it or pass it. Like, there's no merging of these worlds. So, yeah, there's a couple. I'm not going to say they never do it, but that's not exactly how they like want to build the whole offense out of it. So I envision more of a Ram system in the sense of the play action game is very heavy, not just personnel, but heavy action where it's deep action. I think maybe the best way I can put it is Tua operated a lot on quick game timing, three-step timing, whether it was the gun or not. Stafford and where I'm visioning Herbert in this offense is seven-step timing, deep ball timing, digs, and seem a lot more vertical element. I think it's hard because the Miami Dolphins offense was vertical, but it wasn't in the sense that's traditional because it was Tua throwing it to 12 to 15 yards and then the fastest guys in the world catching it and then running and going and gone and taking it to the house. While I envision this more as like a physical deep pass game, like more of an old school play action game, I think maybe the best way to put it. And that's why I'm excited about it. I think it's just going to be more of that kind of traditional sense of how they do it. I'm curious of how he, like, I think Ladd is going to be the guy in this offense. I think that's someone that McDaniel is going to really like because of just his route running and timing and everything. But I see just a lot of those inbreakers, a lot of big, big play action plays that take a little bit more to set up, but McDaniel's a lot better at helping protection, you know, as opposed to what Greg Roman has done maybe the last few years of that. So that's just how I'm envisioning it anyways. And that's what's cool. He adds new twists that I don't even picture at McDaniel. So that's why I'm curious what he decides is going to, what they need and everything. So any more Chargers thoughts? They might get Jim Leonard. Did you see that defense coordinator there? Interviewing Jim Leonard. Do you have any Leonard thoughts?
Yeah.
He's a Badger. So of course I'm a little partial to him, but
I mean, Jim Leonard has been able to, he's been a guy that's been in demand for a couple of years now. I think, I think LA's a good fit. Certainly.
I do too.
They got big shoes to fill, obviously, with Jesse out the door. I think Jesse did a fantastic job of, especially 2 years ago, making the most with the talent that he had, overproducing probably with the talent that he had. I think Joe Ortiz has his work cut out for him. I mean, is Khalil Mack coming back? Like, you know,
I think he is, but like, who knows? They signed Tyrre Tart. I don't know what Khalil Mack's deal is.
Right.
Yeah. No, he's a free agent, but he's coming off the injury. So like, that's the thing too. Of course, he's a Charger player coming off an injury, but that's the thing too. They might just go, okay, hey, we had enough of that, and we just want it. And you know, they traded for Owe, Adafa Owe. So, and I think he's a free agent.
He knows how to get the quarterback.
All of a sudden, crazy.
All of a sudden, like, just couldn't do it at Penn State. That was not coming out.
Never
sacked the quarterback. I remember talking to actually then he was Jason, but Odafe Owe, he went by Jason, obviously, when he was coming out. And we were having this conversation live on NFL Network, and you had to ask the inevitable, like, hey, dude, like, this is the knock. Why no sack production? And he gave whatever his rehearsed answer was from his agent. I almost felt bad asking it, honestly, Nate. But then I said, hey, man, how about spinning it this way? Can I offer a suggestion? He said, what? I said, like, I'm looking at PFF College here. And last year you were, I think, like number three edge against the run. something like that. I don't know if that was nationwide or Big Ten, whatever it was, but it was a good number. It was a good rating. And I'm like, why don't you spin it that way and tell teams, hey, I set the edge, right? I stopped the run. Like, I did my job. It's not all about getting to the quarterback. I'm a team player, blah, 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 blah. And you could see, like, the smile start creeping up his face. Like, yeah, I like that. I like that answer in a meeting. Yeah. It was great to see him actually get unlocked this year and get to the quarterback. And I think that was one of those rare trades that worked for both teams as well with Gilman.
It did. Gilman was great for the Ravens. It was, and I at first was like, yeah, sure, whatever. And he unlocked a lot of what they had. I know it was actually a win-win trade. Yeah, I had a moment like that with Tetro McMillan last year, Super Bowl time, actually. I sat and talked to him. I called him Tet. And then and I was like, do you go by that? And he corrected me. And I was like, oh, I actually didn't know that. Okay, cool. Learned that. But then I asked him, I was like, what's a part of your game that like you think you do better than you get credit for? And he was like, well, I actually like blocking, I think, more than people realize. I think people think I'm a flashy player. Da, 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 da. And I could tell it was genuine. It wasn't a coached up answer. And then I told him afterwards, I was like, hey, so like at the combine, you're going to get like a lot of those questions. So really keep harping on that. I was like, keep going. Like, no, I actually like doing it. I just wasn't asked to do it. I was like, they're going to love that. They're going to ask you about why this. They're going to ask me, you were a volleyball player. Are you soft or anything? Don't act like you're like the toughest guy ever, but just say like, hey, I wasn't asked. I was the X receiver catching touchdowns. So I kind of had a similar moment to you where I was just kind of like, hey, spin it this way. I'm big. I just wasn't asked to do it. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to say he was Hines Ward, but he was a solid blocker. And I obviously had a good rookie year this year as well. There was a couple more coordinator hires, and we got, because this is Football 301, we get through two subjects and it takes us an entire half hour. So
I gave you 20 minutes right in here, Andrew. That's why.
It's perfect. But there's a bunch of other coordinators got hired. Jonathan Gannon, defense coordinator, Packers. Patrick Graham, defense coordinator, Steelers. Zach Robinson, hired as OC of the Bucks. Denard Wilson, defense coordinator, Giants. Bobby Slowick, offense coordinator, Dolphins. Christian Parker, defense coordinator of the Cowboys. Any of those, before we kind of hit our first break, that maybe caught your interest, interesting to talk out, you want a thread to pull out with any of those?
Sure. Number one, the Bobby Slowick one. I'm fascinated to see who his quarterback is and how this Slowick is different than the one that we saw in Houston. And then number two, Zach Robinson. Is he pistol as much as he was in Atlanta? What does that offense look like? I believe he and Baker crossed paths for a hot 5 minutes a couple of years ago with the Rams. So with curious.
Longer than you in Shieldhouse.
Right, exactly. It's crazy, man. I was there, did the preseason forever, and then because of Gold Zone for the Paris Games, I missed all of training camp and landed back in LA the night before our first preseason game last year without having seen a single day of training camp and just like calling people and talking to them and like consuming the Rams.com content while in my hotel room doing the Olympics. And it was the most terrifying thing of all time. So no, I did not get to meet Nate, but Zach Robinson, Baker, what that looks like, to be honest with you, because that was one of the coaching situations in which I expected it to blow up in Tampa, but it did not. So there's a lot of pressure. I hate to use the word pressure. It's a clickbait cliche here, because there's pressure on everybody in this business at every level. But what's on the Bucks' plate this year now that I think the Falcons are going to get better? I think the Panthers now have a playoff appearance under their belt. Kellen Moore's got the Saints heading in the right direction.
Yep.
It's still not the strongest division, but it isn't a pushover division. So there's a lot riding on the Bucks this year.
Yeah, I mean, every Bucks fan has wanted Todd Bowles fired for like 5 years now. I agree. And also just the makeup of this team. Mike Evans is a free agent, but they're at a crossroads with a lot of their players. Not a lot, but a decent amount. Like Levante David's finally going to have to move on. They need defensive help up front. Like they're always an interesting team to try and project for mock drafts. because I mean, they kind of do what they want to do. They don't really kind of take need. They kind of go best position. But now you kind of see a little more warts in this offense and defense. I thought outside Todd Bowles blitzes, they don't have anyone that can just win. And you need that especially when it comes to, you know, push comes to shove in these tight games and people are so well game planned. And on top of it, offensively, they had O-line injuries, but also just they kind of were in a slog the whole second half of the year. The run game was bad. It went from really good to really bad. They had the same O-line coach, so that was curious to me. Like I said, yes, they had injuries. Bucky Irvin got banged up as well. So that's part of it. But I'm with you that one is it's kind of a make or break year for them. It's like, okay, because if like Robinson could do well, and if they don't do well overall, like Bowles is under heat. So it might be just a revamp anyways. And that's kind of, yeah, that's kind of how I look at it anyways. Robinson grew on me. I thought he got kind of knocked for some of this stuff because of quarterback limitations. You mentioned the pistol stuff. Penix's knees are probably not going to be any better this upcoming year after another injury. And then we had Kirk Cousins coming off an Achilles. And then it was a little better mover this year, but still it's Kirk Cousins, who I graduated the same year in high school with. So I'm 30, blah, 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 years old. Old, Andrew. This whole year, I always gain weight during the season. And this year, getting it back off, like in the last 5-6 weeks has been really hard. And that's when I was like, I'm old now. This is how everyone warns you about. Like, I always gain 10 pounds during the season. It is what it is. But it's like, usually I can just boop, drop it right off. It's been a struggle, Andrew. It's been a struggle the last 2 months to knock off this weight.
We're getting old,
I feel,
man.
Very old. Like, we are. It's very old.
When Vinatieri retired, I believe he was the last player in the league that was older than me. So when he retired, that was a dark, dark day. And that was a couple of years ago, granted. And then I have had a couple of players in the last few years, including one this year, come up to me saying something along the lines of like, "Hey man, I used to watch you as a kid." I'm like, "Oh my God, shut up."
Oh, man. Thanks.
Please.
Appreciate it.
Like, I'm flattered, but like, please. Please don't say that.
But because you have an age, and so you look exactly how they looked when they were kids. So that's exactly what it is, Andrew. That's how I'm going to spin it for you. Honestly, yeah. This was great, Andrew. I'm so glad we finally got to work.
Likewise.
A little corporate synergy. Long time first. Last year at the combine, right? It was the first time we met.
We met at the combine last year, finally. Yes, we've been in the room 1,000 times. We probably had not said hi to each other. I'm going to be up there for a couple of days, and then I got to ship out for the Olympics. But yeah, you there early in the week?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Man, make sure you check out the Olympic stuff.
I'll find you early in the week. We're also going to get a new headshot there as I'm circling it on my screen right now. Like, you guys, you and Chuck just look casual and cool and... Yeah, but like, it's casual and cool, right? And the daily, Yahoo Sports Daily, that crew looks great. And then it's like NFL
cool.
Network headshot from 6 years ago, looking stiff and wearing a tie. Oh, angry look,
I
blue steel.
It looks good. No, I think it's the tea gray. I think that one was, I think that's what you call that one.
We'll have a gasoline fight. In San Francisco.
Orange mocha frappuccinos. That's what we're going to have in San Francisco. It's going to be great. It'll be awesome. I could do a whole pod asking you about Olympic stuff. How is it? Can I get 2 minutes? Like, can you give me what stuff you're looking forward to? Anything you're dreading in Olympic stuff? Like anything. Just make a one high, one low. I'll make sure to check that out because I'm jealous.
I mean, Lindsey Vonn, first and foremost, and she's going to be on the mound opening weekend. She's 41 with a titanium knee. Like, it's a legit titanium knee. And she had the surgery, how many ever years ago? She retired and was an NBC commentator. And she had the surgery just for, like to have a better life.
Maintenance.
And then after having the surgery, she's like, yeah, maybe I'll get back on the slopes and maybe I'll. And then all of a sudden she's back at the Olympics and she's not a token teammate here. She has been killing it the last 2 months on the World Cup circuit in Europe, killing it. Like she's on the podium every week.
It's remarkable.
So she has a legit shot to go there and win gold. Mikayla Shiffrin is as decorated and as great a downhill skier as we have ever seen. Obviously, her last Olympics did not go well with the multiple falls, so she's on a little bit of a redemption tour. The hockey is going to be great, both men and women. We think inevitably we'll see U.S.-Canada gold medal matches, but who knows? First time we've had NHL players in since Vancouver. Jordan Stolz, when it comes to speed skating, is like the best we've seen from an American since like Bonnie Blair and Steve Hyden. Or Eric Hyden, I'm sorry, Steve Hyden, the former Browns tight end. I'm messing up my Hydens here. So there's going to be some of that, I guarantee you.
Good references, though.
Like, football game to football game. I'm not going to say Steve Hyden. It's Eric Hyden, obviously. And then Ilya Malinin. For those who don't know Ilya Malinin, the quad god. He's a kid from Vienna, Virginia. I grew up right down the street, two towns over in Reston, Virginia. He's 18 years old. He is as good a male figure skater as there is alive. No one had ever done a quadruple axel, hence quad god, in competition until he landed it. He has landed seven of the same routine. He is so good, he can fall and still win gold, because the level of difficulty for his routine is that high. So if he does not win gold, it would be a colossal upset. This is a great American team, and I'm looking forward to it. The Gold Zone is back, and that's what I'm going to be doing. Scott Hansen and Matt Eisman and Jack Collinsworth, the same crew getting back together. It's going to be a little bit, I don't want to say slower than the summer games, because they're like, the summer games had like half or twice the athletes, right? Twice the events, twice the athletes. Winter games are different, but it'll be fun, man. We're starting on Saturday. So the opening ceremony is Friday of the Super Bowl. And that's why I can't stay the entire time in San Francisco. And we'll be bright and early on Saturday, going all day and all day Sunday as well. Super Bowl Sunday. Like, I know you're gonna be watching football, but like pregame on NBC on one TV and then Peacock, Olympics, whatever,
what we'll be doing
on the other.
I don't need to see a pregame football show. I'm going to be talking about this freaking game for the next 10 days. I'm already looking up special team stats, so I need to change my brain a little bit.
I get it. Believe me, I have two sides of my brain right now. Like, I was flying back from week 18, and I was like, all right, time to dive into the Olympics.
And it's like not just one sport. It's 50 freaking disciplines of every
There are 16 sports, technically, in the winter games, the 25th winter games. I had been prepping beforehand, and NBC has an unbelievable Olympic research staff that doesn't just get, you know, fired it up every 18 months. They work 12 months out of the year every year, because they are constantly cranking out content in preparation for the games. So, I mean, I have a stack of PDFs. And like all these chasing gold vignettes that they have been putting together. So believe me, there is a lot to get through, and that research team will be invaluable, because you want to tell these stories the right way. I mean, you have athletes who've been literally working their entire lives for maybe 60 seconds, right? This is their moment. Yep. This is their life's work. Like, honor their story. Be sure you put the proper context on it, because it could be over like that.
It's remarkable. As someone that has been around athletes my whole life, it's something I've appreciated. I have always just loved the Olympics. I think my family instilled in me, but still, I just loved it. Like, it's the best of the best. I'll watch somebody play the violin. If they're the best of the best, I love seeing that. And that's what I love about the Olympics. It's the best of the best, but it's also, as I've learned more about myself and learned about other athletes and everything, it's remarkable the mindset that these people have to have and the discipline that they have to have for years and years, every single day. And it's win or lose. Like, I'm also, it's remarkable to me for guys that push it so much, and women as well, just people that push it as much as they do, and then they win, and then they just do it again. And then they just go through the cycle again. And I get people are wired that way, but as I've gotten older, it's like, they're superhuman to me. Like, it's remarkable the mindset, the discipline that they ever have. So that's why I love it. I haven't even talked about the curling, which is one of my favorite events.
curling begins Wednesday, by the way. Curling begins 2 days before the opening ceremony. Wednesday. Yeah.
Okay.
So right. It begins early. That's why we have a 55-year-old curler on the team. You have a male female. I can't remember their last name.
Yeah, the mixed curling team. Yeah, yeah, yep. That,
right, mixed. Are they brother and sister? They're both named Corey.
Or are they?
There's that. I haven't gone deep into my curling yet, so I'm going to stop before I make an ass of myself.
No, you need but to know the curling teams I need for to know. Sweden.
No, I do need to know. I do need to know. But the what you said about, like, you keep going and then you do it again. There's some great stories here about those that stepped away. So not just, like, for example, Lindsey Vonn because of the injuries, but like Alyssa Liu, yeah, who is part of a utterly fantastic women's figure skating team. She retired at 16. She was like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, I've been training my whole life. The mental strain, I need a break. And then she was skiing 2 years ago and was like, I don't know, maybe I'll get back. And then she went back and won a world championship. And if you look at the video of her routine where she knows she's got it, she's like laughing. And I'm not talking like the Joker, but there's almost a little bit of that element to it. Like, I can't believe, like, I'm winning. Yeah. Like, I'm going. She quit. Like,
dopamine and overload Chloe kind Kim. Of thing. Like,
right.
Like endorphin overload.
And she
like,
wasn't supposed to win when she came back. And she won. Chloe Kim, is Miles Garrett's significant other. They're a lovely couple.
Yes.
Chloe threw her shoulder out, like tore a labrum a couple of weeks ago. She is trying to become a three-time gold medal winner on the half pipe, the women's half pipe, win three consecutive games. It looked like she was going to quit after the second one, or the first one, came back, did the second one, thought about it, came back, and is now trying for a third, but is going to have to do it with her shoulder braced up. She says she's going to be able to go, so that will be fascinating. Miles is over in Europe training with her, or was. I believe they just got back to L.A. last week. So there's something to keep an eye on as well, because she is a great gold medal favorite for the Americans as well.
Oh, and great personality too. You also has a great personality.
So cool.
You, Andrew, you're a great personality.
You, Nate Tice. Thanks, dude. Glad we did this.
No, but I'm so glad we went from coaching news and coordinator news and we ended up with Olympic talk, because actually you kind of got me very excited again. My brain for other sports turns on as soon as the Super Bowl wraps up. Not that the Super Bowl doesn't take a lot of that brain, but I'm so excited to watch it. And so I'm so glad that you get to do that stuff. And I truly great work that you do, because I enjoyed it this summer. Enjoy all the stuff that you guys have going on. So thank you, Andrew. Make sure to catch Inside Coverage in San Fran for the Super Bowl and Football 301 as well. Of course, this show starting Monday. And then check out Andrew, all of his Olympic stuff coming up as well. Again, Andrew, thank you for joining me. This was a ton of fun.
Love it, Nate. See you in San Francisco.
See you in San Fran. All right, we're going to take our first break, and then we'll come back with a little bit of, we're going to mock the draft. All right, see you guys in a sec. All right, we are back. Chuck and I did a mock draft this week. I'm going to roll through this list solo, which should be fun. Just doing it with Charles, it's really fun to kind of like break it out. We break down exactly what these teams might need. Hey, this guy might be leaning this way with a coordinator change. And that's why these mock drafts start getting more and more honed in, on top of Senior Bowl coming in, Shrine game coming in, and seeing kind of some reports from that. So like, yeah, we're entering silly season with coaching hires, all that stuff. We're entering silly season with the draft. But now it's also very fun to kind of start going like, okay, you are declaring. Okay, you are eligible for this draft class. So we'll start with the top 10. This is just the picks. And then I'm going to just highlight a few that I enjoyed, how we paired them, our little fantasy booking, as I like to say. Fernando Mendoza to the Raiders, pick number one quarterback. Number two, the Jets, Reuben Bain from Miami, an edge player. Pick number three, the Cardinals take I'll call him offensive lineman, Francis Maugoa from Miami as well, who is a right tackle slash guard. Cardinals need that. No matter what, they need a lineman. I actually like that fit a lot. Pick four, Titans take Arvell Reese from Ohio State, linebacker slash edge, however you want. Front seven weapon, I'll describe him. Pick five, New York Giants select safety. Caleb Downs would be the highest safety drafted since Jamal Adams. Also from Ohio State, very good player. Positional value of safeties is going to be a It's going to be a discussion for the next few months, so everybody's strapping about that. Pick number six, the Browns take offensive tackle Spencer Fanneau from Utah, who's a right tackle there. They need linemen badly. Pick seven, Washington takes edge David Bailey from Texas Tech. He's a little dynamo off the edge. That might be the one, one of the highlights, so I'll hold on to that one. Pick eight, Saints take receiver Carnell Tate from Ohio State. Felt like I had some rhymes there. Pick nine, the Chiefs take running back Jeremiah Love from Notre Dame. And pick 10, the Bengals take corner Mansur Delane from LSU. Whew. All right, three of my favorites at the very least. Mendoza with the Raiders is going to be a great one. I don't know if I want to use that as my one of my three, but I think that's why that Raiders job and that Raiders opening is a lot more interesting than maybe some of the other openings for a team that was so bad this year. Mendoza, good quarterback. I haven't written my full write-up yet of kind of like my profile like I like to do with a lot of the top quarterback prospects for Yahoo. But from what I wrote about him last year going into the season and what I watched this year, a high floor quarterback that has a little bit more ceiling, a higher ceiling than I think he's getting credit for. I think the comparisons he's getting is kind of to Jared Goff and who I've compared him to. I've been saying this is the high-end comparison is Matt Ryan, is that I think he has a little bit more arm juice than he's getting some credit for and also a little better athlete. But man, this guy is very smart. Goes to the ball goes to the right spot. They run a lot of RPOs. They're in the gun almost exclusively at Indiana. But I feel like his footwork is so clean and his polish and how hard he works and he's a good enough athlete that transitioning to more under center will be no issue for Mendoza, for whoever's calling plays for him. I think he throws well in the move. It makes sense. He throws ball over the middle well. He anticipates well. That I think that he would translate to a Shanahan-Kubiak offense if it is Clint Kubiak, but also think his skill set matches for a lot of offenses. I really like Mendoza. I would say I maybe have Cam Ward a hair over him, but same kind of tier as far as prospects. It's the same grade I gave CJ Stroud, which is a compliment. I know CJ Stroud's stock isn't very high right now, but that is a compliment. Like a good top 15 pick in any draft class that's going to be number one in this draft class because there's nobody above that. That's how I view Mendoza. And I think also the Raiders setup could set up very well with them with Bowers, Genty, even Trey Tucker. I think there could be he can kind of hit the ground running. Not going to be amazing, but like the Raiders could have a nice offseason if they hit this right. Another one in the top 10 I liked was David Bailey going to the Commanders. The Commanders desperately need pass rush. They signed Von Miller. They have all these retreads out there. They need guys that can rush the passer. They need to clean up a lot with that franchise, but I actually think that their offense is set up decently. They need to look at a receiver too, long-term one. Like I like some of their auxiliary guys, but they need someone there. The offensive line, I know they moved on for their offensive line coach, but the offensive line's got some bones to it that actually work. Maybe can drop somebody in, but their defense was so bad last year. They had injuries, but Dorrance Armstrong was having probably a career year this year at edge for the Commanders. It's kind of getting undersold under the radar a little bit before he got hurt, but he actually showed a little more than I've given him credit before as a player. I'm not saying he's a one. So I would have, if you drop Bailey in, Bailey is so good rushing the passer. He is explosive. He has a quick first step. He can chain moves together as well. He is average at best and will always be average at best. And I mean that at best against the run. That's going to be the big hang up with him. He is not paid and not won't be drafted to stop the run, but he can at least be average in that area where he's not Bryce Huff or somebody where they, hey, we'll just run the ball at this guy. Then he's worth it. Definitely in the top 10, but why you draft him is because he can get after the passer. And that's why the Commanders can need him. And I actually think other guys that they have some interesting defensive tackles, Payne, etc. They have guys that can eat up blocks. So I think Bailey can add some juice, inject some speed on this defense that really needs it. So yeah, David Bailey, a player I'm high on. He'll end up in my top 10 on my big board. I think he was at 10 on my midseason board. Yeah, pick seven. I really like this pairing. The last one, this is true fantasy booking here. That's Jeremiah Love going to the Chiefs. I have to talk about this. Maybe Eric Bieniemy coming as offensive coordinator. He gets his, you know, gets to take a running back in the top 10. But this team needs speed. I know. Well, they took Xavier Worthy and he set the record. Game speed. game speed this team needs. They need a guy that can actually hit 20 miles an hour with the ball in his hands. They need a guy that can take a screen, a check down, or a run to the house. This offensive line for the Chiefs is much better, much better than I think that people are going to get credit for. Simmons was a hit at left tackle when healthy. Left guard Kingsley Suamataia had a very good year, actually. Like, really kind of came into his own. Center, of course, Creed Humphrey is a star. Trey Smith is a very good player. And a right tackle, Juwan Taylor, is not very good. He was overpaid. I get that. But he's a fine, okay starter, midline starter. But why I'm saying all that is they have also have answers there. They have more at tackle as well if they want to move on from that. But I'm bringing that all up because this is how you help out Patrick Mahomes. I know you're going to think receiver, a guy that can take the top off the defense, a guy that can do all that. Yeah, that would help. But I think this offense would boost from a running back that can make the run game more explosive, more dynamic, more venomous, and more scary for defenses to go against. That this offensive line that has been very efficient blocking for 2 years now in the run game can now get some explosives. They barely have any explosive runs in this offense. And then that's where Love comes in. Love is a very good back. He's dynamic. He can catch the ball, take it to the house. Little bit of an upright runner, but he's so fast. Pretty good vision. I wouldn't say he's excellent vision, but good vision, pretty good. Can fit in a lot of offenses because of his size and speed. But man, with the Chiefs, I like this more than other pairings than maybe I've seen for Love. Love could go anywhere. He's going to be a top 10 on everyone's big boards. He could go all the way here, like I'm saying, in the top 10. He could end up in the 20s because he's a running back. That's what this draft class is going to be, guys. It's not a ton of blue chips every year. There's a lot of interesting players, but they're maybe not the premium positions. There's not a lot. There's interesting tackles, not a lot of high-end tackles. Quarterbacks outside Mendoza, it's not great. And there's some interesting receivers. I wouldn't say full on blue chips, but some first rounders, if that makes sense. So why I'm bringing that all up, that Love, yes, he's a running back. You can justify him going top 10 and as opposed to a lot of other classes that might have more top end of talent, D end, anything. Chiefs could go defense. They need a guy that can win one-on-one as well. Chris Jones is getting older. But man, I just want to see this. This is just one thing as a football viewer. I want to see the Chiefs get more dynamic, especially in the run game. So Jeremiah Love would be that answer. All right, now picks 11 through 20. And this class is going to be wide open, guys. There's not a lot of consensus on any of these positions. It's kind of like Mendoza's QB1. Love is running back one. Kenyon Sadiq is tight end one. Outside of that, it's anybody's ball game. We're going to see it kind of coalesce as the draft cycle goes along, but it's wide open. So strap in is what I'm saying here. All right, pick 11. The Dolphins take corner Jamaal McCoy, who did not even play this season. Yes, he was rehabbing from an injury, but he is extremely talented. It's basically him and Delane to me as the CB1, CB2. Dallas Cowboys take linebacker Sonny Styles from Ohio State. Yes, that's two linebackers from Ohio State going in the top 12. Yes, that might actually happen. Styles is awesome. It's a very good linebacker class. Three, Rams via the Falcons take Avion Terrell, brother of AJ Terrell, who is a Falcon. I actually kind of like that little narrative there. Corner from Clemson. I'll talk about that one real quick. I don't know if it's my favorite. The Rams really need a corner. They need a corner with some pedigree, but I think they need a corner with size. And Terrell's biggest knock is size. He's a great player. He's very instinctive, twitchy guy, intelligent player, good technique. Makes plays on the ball, just not very big. So that's going to be the hangup. So the Rams might shy or move to a different kind of body type at that position. We'll see. Pick 14, the Ravens take edge Keldrick Falk. Funny talking about Adolphe Owe with Andrew right there, because Falk would be the next in the line athlete over production. I like Falk a lot. And I can maybe talk about him more in a sec. 15, the Bucks take linebacker CJ Allen from Georgia. Get that Levante David succession plan. The Jets via the Colts take receiver Jordan Tyson from Arizona State. The Lions take tackle Caleb Lomu from Utah. The Vikings take defensive tackle Cade McDonald from Ohio State. The Panthers, we have defensive tackle Pierre Woods from Clemson. And then the Cowboys with their second first round pick via the Packers take Brandon Sis from South Carolina corner. Okay, here. I'm going to talk about Sonny Styles. Sonny Styles rocks. He's long. He was a former safety. He's big. He can rush the passer. He can cover. He's young, even though he's a true senior. He plays with great eyes and instincts that make take advantage of his athleticism. Usually you get guys like this that are so athletic, they can wait a second and then recover to make a tackle on the play, which is always kind of like a little bit of an alarm bell, a little bit of a red flag for me with prospects, not Styles. I think he's a leader type. That's not even me hearing from anybody. That's just me watching on film, how he gets guys in the right spot. I love Styles. I think he's so cool. Such a cool player. Cowboys have needed a linebacker for a while, ever since Leighton Vander Esch retired and battled injuries. So Styles, man, this would really help this defense out. They could go a few spots. They need corner. We have that with pick 20. But this makes a lot as far as player fit, team fit, all that good stuff. They could be also a Jeremiah Love team. Who knows? Maybe they want to crank that up under Clayton Adams and that offense. Another one, Keldrick Falk, I do want to talk about. My midseason big board, I had Falk as player one. Spoilers, he won't be player one for my updated big board, which will probably come after the Super Bowl, maybe, probably after the Combine, let's be honest. But Falk, to me, is... I've seen comparisons to Mykal Williams, and I think he's a little more fluid than Mykal. And I ended up really liking Mykal. I had him as a top 10 player last year. Is with Falk is that he plays the run better than he rushes the passer. I would say he sometimes needs to bring his hands with him. And what I mean by that, bring a little more pop when he takes on blockers. He also has to work on hand technique as a pass rusher, but I thought he improved in that area. I know what the box numbers look like, the box stats look like. I do. I know he didn't get the after the passer a ton, but there's a lot of tools to work with here. He's very young. And playing on a team that wasn't very good. The defense for Auburn was pretty good, though. He got moved around a lot, which I think is a good thing because he has experience now playing rushing from the inside. He had to play four eye a lot. And when you hear four eye, by the way, just O-line technique, a three tech, it just goes inside out. A three tech is someone that's lined up to the outside shade of the guard. And that's usually a defensive tackle. A four eye is a 3-4 defensive end. So almost can look at that as like a hybrid D tackle D end, as far as body types. Falk to me is a true edge, true defensive end, outside linebacker type, not a 3-4 defensive end. It's nice that he can do that. But this is like, that's not going to be conducive to stacking up numbers. So you have to look more at traits and look at more what he can do. And to me, he has a lot of traits. It just hasn't been honed in. Does it happen with Baltimore? Maybe under Jesse Minter. We just talked about Owe kind of clicking together. And coming together under Jesse Minter in LA. I think Falk, if he gets to a right landing spot, could outplay his draft position because just the bundle of tools is so exciting. And he plays hard. He plays the run good already, and there's stuff he can work at, which that's why it's exciting to me, is that the flashes are so good, and I think his head's on straight. It's not flashes because he's a bad off-field. It's flashes because I just think he just needs to be coached up. And yeah, the classic more tools over production guy. I think pick 14 is a perfect spot for him. I'll have him a little higher on my big board, but I think this is a great spot for him. The CJ Allen pick to Georgia from Georgia. That's just, we need the Levante David succession plan. And I love Levante David. And I think Allen is kind of perfect to fill his spot. Really actually similar skill sets. Smart as all get out. The intangibles are great. Good against the run, can athletic enough to play in coverage and work sideline to sideline. David went in the second round. I actually played against him at Wisconsin. He was at Nebraska, probably the best player we ever played against. And his sideline to sideline ability was always what stood out to me on top of just the intelligence and everything. Allen has that. Ever since he's been a freshman wearing 33, he has kind of just brought that to the table. I think this defense could really need that. Levante David is so smart and everything, but you could tell his legs are gone. So just bringing a little bit more speed on that defense would really help him out. I don't know what they'll do with the Bucs. This might be a little high for Allen. I do think he might end up in the top 30 when it's all said and done. I am just encouraged by this, or I do think this would be a really fun fit for him. Last one, Caleb Lomu. The Lions taking him at pick 17. Lomu, I think, is interesting for he might end my tackle one. He has been throughout this process. There's another guy I'm going to talk about in the next section that might be kind of growing in my eyes. We had Spencer Fanneau going higher, pick 6 to the Browns, plays right tackle. He had to move from left tackle to right tackle because Lomu came in to play left tackle for Utah. I think Lomu has a body and a frame that right now lacks ideal strength. I would say it's average. But that's something that, because he's young, he's a redshirt sophomore, coming out with the frame that he has, and the technique he already plays with, the polish he already plays with, the hand placement he already plays with, the light feet he plays with, that's why I'm very bullish on Lomu and what he can become in the NFL. Like, if he ends up being the best player, best lineman from this class, I wouldn't be shocked. I just really think his how he moves is how true blindside protectors move in the NFL. And I just think that he needs a little polish, and I think you can add weight to him, like as far as add strength to him, lower body and core strength. And going to the Lions, yeah, ideally he's playing right away, but he can be behind Taylor Decker, who battled injuries this year. Do you try him at guard? Might not be big enough, but you can. I think he's athletic enough, and I think he's proficient enough as a run and pass protector. He can get away with it if you do want to, like, maybe Mahogany or something of that sort. Mahogany battled injuries as well. The Lions, more than anything, need a center, a long-term center, but they still have to look at the rest of that team and look at what they could possibly get. I'm going with Lomu here, and it's a guy I am particularly high on. We'll see how this process goes. I think the league and other evaluators are a little lower than I am, but man, I think this would be an ideal landing spot for him, for a player that I'm super high on and what he could become. All right. Now, the last third of the first round, pick 21 to 32. All right. We start with the Steelers at 21, taking receiver Mekhi Lemon from USC. 22, we got the Chargers taking Vega Ione from Penn State. I almost said PSU, Portland State for some reason. 23, we got the Eagles taking offense tackle Monroe Freeling from Georgia. Spoilers, I'm going to be talking about him in 1 second. Then the Browns via the Jacksonville Jaguars pick take quarterback Ty Simpson from Alabama. 25, we got the Bears taking defensive tackle Lee Hunter from Texas Tech. Big fan of him. Bills take edge TJ Parker from Clemson. 49ers take offensive tackle Blake Miller from Clemson. Texans take offensive tackle Caden Proctor from Alabama. Rams take receiver Denzel Boston from Washington. Broncos take linebacker Anthony Hill Jr. from Texas. Patriots take tight end Kenyon Sadiq from Oregon. And the Seahawks take edge Cassius Howell from Texas A&M. I actually really like this section. There, I could talk about all of these guys, but I'm going to go with Monroe Freeling from the Eagles. Historically, the Eagles and under Howie Roseman have drafted trenches and corners and receivers. Just that's what they do in the first round. And when I look at their what their kind of makeup, their team makeup is right now, where they can really kind of boost their offense and boost their team, they've drafted so many young guys on the defense that now the offense, I think Howie Roseman already talked about this. The defense is about to start getting expensive, and the offense was expensive, so we went young on defense. Now the cycle returns where I think they start drafting more offense to kind of, you know, mitigate that. Freeling is a left tackle from Georgia. If you asked me in October, I'd be like, wow, this guy should go back to school. This guy, if he comes out, it's like a third rounder. I don't know. He can move pretty well. Second half of the year, some of the best tackle tape I watched, especially the last 3-4 games. A former basketball player, which usually at tackle is kind of like, okay, sure, I'd rather have basketball players at tight end or receiver, but plays tougher and stronger. And that, I think the strength really came on this year, which has kind of opened my eyes to what he could be. That this guy, even just taking the first step, has showed this much that, and when I say this much, I mean battling for the first tackle selected. And yes, I mean that. Like, he might end up as that for me. It looks like a true Pro Bowl left tackle as far as how he moves. Yes, he has a lot of technique stuff to clean up. That's why you have Jeff Stoutland friggin' draft him. But man, he's gritty in the, or he brings some pop in the run game. Like, he's not, and that's why I said a basketball player can be a little iffy for me at offensive line. He doesn't play like that. He moves like that, but he's not soft. He actually had some surprising core strength and anchor moments that really kind of encouraged me. And man, I think the arrow is pointing firmly up with him that, shoot, I know he's getting some first round love now. We have him at pick 23. Next time we do one of these, he might be in the teens. Next time we do another one of these, he might just be even higher. If you can't tell, very bullish on Freeling. I really liked his tape. I'm going to be pretty high on him on my big board. And the Eagles would be an ideal landing spot to give you the kind of that Lane Johnson successor. Maybe play guard for you for a year at the revolving door of right guard there and then boost over to tackle. But yeah, man, cool player, interesting player, good athlete, got some more pop to him. Yeah, ascending player. Another ascending player, Lee Hunter, defensive tackle from Texas Tech, one of the many transfers that they had on this team on defense that really props to their scouting department at Texas Tech. Other teams spent money. They didn't get as many hits as the Red Raiders did. You know, them in like Indiana, and that's Cignetti just scouting everybody. But the Bears, we talked about this endlessly, especially they made the run, weren't great against the run this year. Their spine was, they had injuries, don't get me wrong, but they were just, that was the biggest deficiency with this team. Some of the DB coverage stuff was because of injuries and other stuff, but it kind of came in at the end, second half of the year, or really the last month. But I would say just that was the biggest weakness when I watched them, was just how they held up against a run, who could eat blocks. Older Grady Jarrett's not going to be the greatest at that. Other guys kind of just didn't do, you know, Billings kind of fell off a little this year. So like Hunter, though, big body, but light feet. Had some consistency, I would say, that I watched sometimes this year, but cranked it up late in the year. That can be an interview thing where you make sure you're always going to be a little worried with big guys that maybe some effort stuff isn't all the way there. I don't want to knock the guy. I'm just saying that that has cropped up a little bit. But man, I watched him the last month and a half, give or take. Holy crap. You don't get, again, might be low at 25. It's a good defensive tackle class. Great mover, big body, willing to eat up blocks, but also can, like, if you're in a more aggressive scheme, he can cut across people's faces as a slants or on twists and other plays like that. He's a good enough athlete to do that and has some pass rushing chops. Like, I'm not saying he's amazing at it, but actually, yeah, he's actually fairly good at it already. And I think the arrow's pointing up for that. So if you get a guy that actually legitimately can eat blocks as holding the point in the nose as a nose and eating double teams, and at the same time, if you want to be aggressive with them, use them as a mover, on slants and twists and everything, or just get after the passer and shoot the gap. Not a lot of guys have that skill set, and defensive tackles are, I know it's becoming like, oh, is that the new valued position, premium position? They basically are all are at this point. I think this is a great fit for the Bears and what they need as well. So yeah, Lee Hunter for Texas Tech. And on top of it, even before after we did this mock from a few days ago, he's had a nice Senior Bowl week. So that actually makes us feel even better about this tout. Real quick, I'll talk about Ty Simpson. I don't think he should go in the first round. I think he should go day two. But people get weird with quarterbacks and they don't care about what Nate Tice's big board says. Ty Simpson, when he's rolling, he's rolling to chuck it. He can create a little bit. He's aggressive. He's got pretty good pocket movement. When the negatives with him, not very big, has not started a lot of games, and sometimes he can kind of start spraying some throws when he's not feeling comfortable. He battled injuries in the second half of the year, but that also comes into the not very big part of the discussion. Those things are usually tied together. So those are my big hangups with him. So guys of this size, and I haven't had official measurements yet. I'm just basing off eye test and what frame and everything. That's more to me of a day two guy, kind of an inconsistent, too inconsistent for how he has to win in the NFL for me to go like, yeah, he can be this polished pocket passer and do this, this, and that, but has some dynamicism as being able to throw off platform and create, and as a runner, not outstanding, but has some like above board. And I also just think that, yeah, he has some arm juice. Like he'll throw from a tight pocket and chuck that thing. And I love that. Love the aggression. It's just sometimes can really spray on him. Like he's had some bad misses, especially in the second half of the year. I was actually surprised he came out, but I'm also not, because it's the same argument I kept making about Dante Moore. Dude, you're going to go top 15, almost locked in. Take that money. So it's Simpson, who, depending what happens with Trinidad Chambliss, is kind of QB2 by default. Then even Trinidad Chambliss, I view as a round three guy. And that's kind of how I view Ty Simpson at this point. But people get weird. I had Jackson Dart as an early round three guy, and he went pick in the 20s. You know, you just don't know how this is going to break down. Last one, because I can't help myself, Denzel Boston with the Rams. Just get some monsters on that team, man. Get the Davante Adams succession plan. Get a guy that can play X, open up things for open up things for Puka Nacua, have him move around the formation still, and then maybe get 1 year of Adams, Boston, and Puka Nacua. Oh, boy. Yeah, let's just crank it up, man. And those tight ends, yeah, we just got the monsters out there. Bunch of power forwards on this offense. So I'm more partial to Boston, maybe some other receivers. I think there's kind of a definitive top four in this class. Brought up Carnell Tate, Mekhi Lemon, Jordan Tyson, and then Denzel Boston. Those are the top four to me. We'll see. That's just right now in January. I still got to watch some more. But it's a really cool receiver class. I'm sure I'll have Matt on pretty soon to talk more about it. But Boston with the Rams, I just really like that. Boston with the Bills, Boston with the Patriots, any of those teams, I'd be pretty geeked up about him going there. 49ers, because they might need a receiver, but who knows? They took Blake Miller. They need offensive lineman too. But those are some of my favorite picks from the mock draft that I did with Charles McDonald this week. Please make sure to check that out on Yahoo. We got write-ups on there as well. Might be a little shorter than all the words I just spilled out to talk about them. Thank you so much for joining me today. And Andrew Siciliano, that was a blast. I actually got to talk about the Olympics. Like, not what I woke up this morning thinking I was going to be talking about today, but it got me excited about the Winter Games that are going to be coming up pretty soon, next week. But thank you so much to Andrew for joining me. We'll be back next week, not Sunday, because I'll be traveling on Sunday. But we will be back next week from San Francisco for Super Bowl week. We'll be doing a lot of live shows from the Yahoo offices. So make sure you check out me, Matt, Chuck, all that good stuff next week. We have some fun superlative stuff on Tuesday, and the next Thursday we'll be doing a deep, deep dive into the big game, the big breakdown for the big game. But I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice on social media. Please subscribe to us, follow us, rate us, watch us on YouTube at the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Make sure to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Please leave a little comment. Appreciate those. I like checking those out as well. Thanks to Stone, Awesome Mass, and Behind the Scenes for making us look and sound good. Thank you all for listening. See you guys next week.